time now for the nationally syndicated radio show, The World of Lori Zook. And now, here she is, the smart, the sexy, the savvy, Divine Miss C.
There's a saying in our firehouse that everyone goes home. And we know the perils in our job every time we hear the tone. And on this day we fought a blaze, we did our job, four lives were saved. But in the end I sacrificed my own. I hear bells in the distance, pipers playing a song for me, where flags are folded in our memory. I'm going home to Emmitsburg, they'll call my name in Emmitsburg. Tears are shed and prayers are heard for the fallen and the brave. There is peace above the embers, a lightness in the air. As I float above the members of my station in despair. Smoke, we face our fears, the lives we saved as souvenirs. I go without regret as I declare. I hear bells in the distance, pipers playing a song for me, where flags are folded. They'll call my name in Emmitsburg, but tears are shed and prayers are heard for the fallen and the brave. And the families that we leave behind will gather where I'll be enshrined, along with all the others, and they'll see they're not alone. And the names carved in the monument, say it loud and confident, we'll never be forgotten, and we've made it safely home. I hear bells in the distance, pipers playing a song for me, where flags are memory. I'm going home to Emmitsburg. They'll call my name in Emmitsburg, where tears are shed and prayers are heard for the fallen and the brave. And where tears are shed and prayers are heard for the fallen and the brave.
And welcome to the show. Firefighters are a breed unlike any other. They risk their lives to save others in situations that most people can't even begin to imagine. Now, we open today with an original song, The Fallen and the Brave, written by musician, author, and consumer advocate Dave Carroll, who also wrote the United Breaks Guitarist Trilogy, and he's been a guest on my show several times. Dave wrote the song for the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation, and he was also a firefighter, and he's my co-host today. Dave, I want to welcome you back to the show.
Hey, it's a pleasure. And I know as a guest on your show, Lori, that was exciting, but to be a co-host today, that's a whole other level of honor.
So well, thank you.
Our guest on the show today is Chief Ron Czarnicki, Executive Director of the Foundation. So welcome to the show, Chief.
thank you for having me on the show today, and I'm really pleased to have an opportunity to talk to you a little bit about the foundation and share some thoughts with both of you and your listening audience. This is a great opportunity, and I really appreciate that.
Thank you. Now, Chief, I'd like to read your mission statement, which says, "Our mission is to honor and remember America's fallen fire heroes, to provide resources to assist their survivors in rebuilding their lives, and work within the fire service community to reduce firefighter deaths and injuries."
And, Chief, what would be the history? I know myself, I don't really remember a time when I didn't know about the National Fallen Firefighters as a name, but maybe you could go into a little bit of the history and how it came to be.
Absolutely. So in the early days, the United States Fire Administration, which is an entity of the United States government, was responsible for holding a national memorial service. And the difficulty was it was federal employees doing it, and it was tied to the federal budget. And unfortunately, you know, that makes it difficult to pay for some of the expenses of the families. And so in the early days, we as a nation would invite the families of fallen firefighters to come to Emmitsburg, which is our home. That's where the National Emergency Training Center is located. It's about 20 minutes south of Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, but in Maryland. And we would invite the families to come up and then say, oh, by the way, we're going to honor your fallen firefighter, but you're going to have to pay your own expenses to get there. And it just didn't sit right. And so Senator Paul Sarbanes from Maryland decided that there needed to be a foundation, a non-governmental entity, to do the memorial service and to do the support for the families. So he enacted legislation in 1992 that created the foundation. So we were born as a result of a congressional mandate. And in that mandate, he said that we could be a nonprofit. So we're a 501c3 corporation in Maryland. And we were able to fundraise, which is a big piece, and those funds are then used to pay for families' expenses so they could come to the memorial where our nation would honor the sacrifice that their loved one made. And then it went beyond that because we've learned that these families have had such a tragic loss of their loved one that they have a hard time kind of pulling all the pieces back together. And so we began to build survivor support programs for the family members and the coworkers, you know, the other firefighters who work with the firefighter that died in the line of duty, and started to build a support mechanism. So that's the second part of our mission, is to really work at helping them put their lives back together and determining where their new normal is, what their new level of normalcy might be. And then after 9/11, interesting that, you know, here we're, you know, just around the 15th anniversary of 9/11, when 343 FDNY firefighters died and 99 other firefighters died that year, we realized that we were running out of room at the memorial for names of fallen firefighters, because there's almost 4,000 names there. And so the immediate outcry was to build a bigger memorial, but our board took steps to say, yes, we need to improve and increase the size of the memorial, but maybe we ought to get involved with preventing line-of-duty deaths so that the families and the departments don't have to go through the tragedy of the loss of their loved one. And so that's when we began working with the fire service community to reduce injuries and deaths within the fire service. And that kind of made up the three components of our mission.
Okay, now, Chief, what is your background, and how did you become involved?
Well, I grew up just south of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and grew up in a fire service family. My mom and dad both were charter members of the local firehouse, and so I joined at a very early age as a volunteer firefighter, and always wanted to be a career firefighter. Always wanted to do that. I knew my calling from an early age. But unfortunately, you know, there wasn't many fire department jobs in the Pittsburgh area, so I began applying outside of it, and I heard that Prince George's County, Maryland was hiring, so I applied and went down to the D.C. area and took the test, and 2 years later got called and started on January 3rd, 1978 as a firefighter in Prince George's County, Maryland. Now, Prince George's borders the District of Columbia on its eastern side, so Andrews Air Force Base, Air Force One is located there. University of Maryland and NASA Goddard Space Flight are all in Prince George's County to give people kind of geographical bearing. And so I worked my way up through the ranks of the department, and in 1997 was appointed chief of the Prince George's County Fire Department.
Okay.
And served a few more years as chief. And then as I got to get a little older, I realized that at some point, you know, you have to do other things with your life. And I had always been involved with the foundation, providing support and assistance through my career. It's something that just all the departments in the Washington metropolitan area did because of the need and the efforts that we wanted to make sure the families were taken care of. So I'd been to a couple of the memorial services, and I saw an advertisement in one of the fire publications that they were looking for an executive director. And I said, what the heck? See what happens. So I filled out an application, sent my resume in, and the chairman of the board, his name was Hal Bruno, and Hal was a huge news guy. He worked for ABC News, he worked for World News, a bunch of different entities, but he also was a volunteer firefighter in Montgomery County, Maryland, which adjoins Prince George's. And I knew Hal from my days in Prince George's, and he calls me up and says, Ron, you know, what's the deal? And I said, well, I know that my career would be coming to an end, and I wanted to go out and just see what it was like to go through an interview process, never thinking that I would even, you know, have a potential to be that. And he says, well, if you want the job, it's yours. And it just happened that quick. And that's kind of my fire service background, but I've done a lot of charity work in my career, a lot with muscular dystrophy and other events. So I was able to bring some fundraising skills and some development skills to the foundation as well.
And how many, what year was that, Chief, that you became the executive director?
I started July 1st, 2001, just a couple of months before 9/11.
Wow.
And it truly was a baptism by fire because everything changed as a result of 9/11 relative to the world and also the fire service community. So it made a big difference. We actually deployed, but we were asked to go to New York City by then Joe Albaugh, who was the director of FEMA, to begin providing family support. And we've been here ever since. As a matter of fact, I'm in New York City today. They added some names from the individuals who died post 9/11 from the World Trade Center disease to the SDNY Memorial yesterday. And so we were up for that ceremony, and we're still doing long-term support for the City of New York Fire Department, their families, and the fire service community.
Organizationally, though, is there a national mandate, or I guess an organization in all 50 states, or do you just advocate on behalf of all 50 states? Do you have support in each of the states in the union?
Well, for the fire service, there's one organization, the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation, who's mandated by Congress to do the memorial and help the families. We don't have satellite organizations. Our brothers and sisters in law enforcement have an organization called COPS, Concerns of Police Survivors, and they have chapters in every state, and it works for them. And they do a good job with that. And then they have the National Law Enforcement Memorial, which is the actual monument in D.C. But we have teams who are in each state that go out and help when the line of duty death occurs, and they're called LAST, Local Assistant State Team. And they're made up of fire service individuals who are familiar with the processes relative to having a line of duty death and what things need to be taken care of and what efforts have to be put in place, what struggles the department may have, what things are going to affect the families and the community. And these teams are supported through us with a grant from the Department of Justice. The tie there is the Department of Justice is mandated to coordinate the federal death benefit. It's called the Public Safety Officer Benefit Program, which is a line of duty death payment to families of fallen public safety officers, fire, police, EMS. And they fund the teams through us to be able to be there within 6 to 8 hours of the death being reported to immediately begin providing some assistance with funeral details and other elements that need to be taken care of with the department who's had their worst day ever. And those teams function independently, from the standpoint of, you know, they're usually made up of men and women of different fire departments within the region. They're local, so they know the lay of the land. They know the different members of the organizations or departments that may be affected by the death. And it really makes it a great way for us to get some immediate attention and intervention to help them, you know, set the process in motion the right way. It's so much easier to get it done right the first time than to try and go back and clean up some things that unfortunately sometimes plague a process that we're involving the death of an individual and elements related to an investigation and benefits and other claims that may come forward as a result of the loss of the firefighter.
All right, now let me, Dave's song, obviously, it's about the location of the memorial in Emmitsburg, and you were talking about that memorial. What did it take to actually create a single national memorial? Is it difficult to do that?
It was a long process. Before 1981, there was no national memorial. And so, again, Senator Paul Sarbanes from Maryland wanted to lead the charge of creating a fallen firefighters memorial. And so he chose the property, which is the National Emergency Training Center in Emmitsburg, to build it. The NETC, as it's referred to, the National Emergency Training Center, originally was St. Joseph's College. It was the first Catholic women's school in America that was started by Elizabeth Seton, who later formed the Daughters of Charity, an order of nuns that are serving around the world to help help reduce poverty and people that have difficult challenges in life. And so the college was an all-girls school, and just down the road was Mount St. Mary's, which was where the seminary was and all the boys' school. And at some point it was decided to make them a co-ed facility, and so they closed St. Joseph's and moved all the students to Mount St. Mary's, and that became then Mount St. Mary's University, as it's known now. And the federal government bought St. Joseph's College back in the late 60s and converted that, and that's where the National Fire Academy is, the Emergency Management Institute, and both of those are training facilities for senior leadership of fire and emergency planners, and it's where the National Fallen Firefighters Memorial is physically housed. And the memorial was built in 81. The first service was held in 82, and the names from 1981 were added to that memorial in 82. And so this year in Emmitsburg, we will add the names of all the firefighters who died in 2015, which will be 79 individuals, and then 8 others who died in previous years. Sometimes it takes a little bit of investigative work to determine specifically if the death was a line of duty or for some other reason. And so there are some cases that kind of get stuck in the process until they're approved. And then we're adding, in addition to those 88 names, 24 names of individuals who died as a result of the World Trade Center disease that has been followed since the collapse of the World Trade Center. And those individuals were approved just a month ago for the federal death benefit and will then be honored in Emmitsburg this October. So the total number this year we're adding to the memorial is 112 names. And normally we've seen a reduction in the number of line of duties each year, but because of the catch-up number from previous years and the 24 FDNY members, we're at a much higher state this time.
Okay. Now, Dave, I know we had talked before, and you had a question about the significance of flags you wanted to ask the chief.
Absolutely, yeah. I had the honor, I guess, last year of being at the ceremony, both the vigil and the event on Sunday. And as a Canadian, we tend to not have as I guess maybe meaningful of ceremonies as the Americans do. And so it was a real honor to see this unfold. And I tried to tap into that actually with the song and make sure that the listener can maybe experience what it would be like to actually be at the ceremony and drink up some of these meaningful actions and stuff. And so I guess the question is, one of the things I like most is the folding of the flags and how much meaning is involved in that. Can you explain the significance of the flags to the families? And I know maybe it hasn't happened for the entire history, but I think they do fly on Capitol Hill now before they go to Emmitsburg. Is that true? And can you talk about that?
Absolutely. And Dave, thanks for coming last year. It was great to have you there. And we encourage anyone that wants to come. The event is open to the public, so we would like to think that if people want to see the ceremony and learn more about how we honor those fallen men and women, please come to Emmitsburg the weekend of October 7th, 8th, and 9th this year and see how it's done. And so the flag is a very significant part of the ceremony. Those flags do fly over the United States Capitol, and they fly over the National Fallen Firefighters Memorial. And then a fire department honor guard folds each one into the symbolic triangle, and then those are stored until the memorial service. There's an actual ceremony a week before on Capitol Hill where Congress presents the flags to us in a short ceremony on the grounds of the Capitol. And then those flags are transported by motorcade up to Emmitsburg and prepared for the service. And so each family who attends the memorial service, that is families of a fallen firefighter, are individually called up to the front of the memorial site. And a uniformed fire chief presents to them the United States flag, a long stem red rose, which is our symbol of our commitment to family, and a custom firefighter badge that has the name of a deceased firefighter on it and the symbol of a line of duty death. And those are presented to the family by a fire service representative, and then a fire service representative has a moment to offer condolences and to ensure the family that we won't forget the loss of their loved one. And we do that for each and every firefighter that we honor. So we'll do that 112 times this year. And the ceremony takes about 2 hours, but there is a lot of tradition. We have pipes and drums and honor guard, flag bearers, procession in, salute to the family by the fire service, the sea of blue, along with some presentations or speeches, I should say. Last year, President Obama attended. We have members of Congress. We have the United States Fire Administrator. We'll read some tributes to some of the firefighters at the memorial service. And then we fill it with some music because we want it to be a celebration of life. We don't want it to be another funeral. You know, the families have been through some very tough times, and so we want to try to be as uplifting as we can. And we do that with words and with music and through the program itself. We have about 5,000 people who descend into Emmitsburg to watch the memorial service. And as Dave said, there's a candlelight service the night before, on Saturday, in which there is music as well. But the big piece is during the day on Saturday, we ask the children of the fallen firefighters to build a luminary bag. And it's a special tribute. They get a chance to decorate a white paper bag that they can put anything they'd like about their firefighter on. Pictures and notes, stickers, all kind of different things. And then those bags are placed at the memorial on Saturday afternoon. And then as the sun begins to set and our candlelight service starts, a candle is placed in each bag and lit. And it creates that that significant sight of that eternal flame of commitment and support by the foundation for the families, and it's in that bag that firefighter's child made. And it's a really moving event.
That was one of the probably one of the most emotional points for me. I think as a musician, I had to come out and sing the song as a vigil, and I was standing behind the honor guard of firefighters and the luminary bags, and as I was performing, I had to sort of look away because I was trying to concentrate on what I was doing, because you get a little choked up when you realize the work that's gone into the luminary bags and that there's a personality being represented and a loss of an individual along that long row. I think there was in the high 70s last year, wasn't it, Chief?
And it was, Dave. And that's, you hit the nail right on the head. It's that individual personality that we were trying to capture in those luminary bags.
You know, listening to the two of you, it's I hear Dave saying he was choking up thinking, you know, while playing the song. I'm choking up here while listening to the two of you talk about it, because it's, to me, it's so emotional. And I am from the New York metro area, Chief. I was just there a few weeks ago visiting family, so I remember where I was on 9/11, and it was just absolutely devastating. Yet it was amazing how everybody pulled together at that time, and I'd like to see that again in this country. You don't necessarily see that now. I want to ask you, though, because your website was so impressive, just the way it's laid out, how you can find so much information. It made it so easy for me to go through when I was doing the research, you know, to be able to ask you, you know, so we could ask you some of these questions. But I want to cover a little bit on how survivor benefits work. I mean, a lot of people, I had never heard of your organization until Dave sent me your song to listen to, and I went, this song is like an anthem. It brought me to tears. And I'm going, who are these people? And then he started telling me about your organization. So can you tell us a little bit about maybe how survivor benefits work?
Absolutely. And so one of the things we realized early on with the creation of the foundation is that the memorial service is critical, but these families have to go home and try and put their lives back together. And oftentimes the firefighter might have been the major breadwinner in the family. And if the families have to figure out, you know, how to put food on the table and shoes on the kids and all those other elements, and it makes it difficult. So we began to put programs together that would help them. We have a survivors conference every year, which we teach life skills, financial planning. We do basic auto repairs, home improvements. We'll do some elements related to grief and loss, how to deal with that. Especially we see tough times for the families around the holidays or those special events, the marriages of children, and the firefighter's not there. And so we have some program pieces to help families kind of navigate through that, along with scholarships for college and job training for both the children and partners of firefighters. And we do a lot of individual counseling and intervention. We have a group of clinicians that help us to do some sessions during the Memorial Weekend and during the Survivors Conference. And then we're always there in support of the families, because what we do is we match every family up with another survivor, a peer. And we have survivors who have been helping us for years that have been down that road. They understand it better than anybody else. And so we always try to match them up early on in the process so that that new family has somebody to call if they're just having a bad day. Or if they need to talk to somebody or just cry on the phone at 2 o'clock in the morning, they've got somebody they can reach out to. And then we will then do follow-up and support long-term if something is needed. And it really is a network of survivors helping survivors. We found that to be the most healing aspects of the program, is that letting them help each other. And the new families get introduced to what we call them our returning survivors. They're the survivors that have been here at events and activities before. And it gives them a chance to interact in Emmitsburg, and then when they go back, start building that relationship. And we'll do, you know, whatever we need to help them. If there's something going on in their community, there's something relative to their department, you know, we have our last teams will go in and provide some support, or we'll actually go out in person and try to do some intervention and some help as well. Our survivor programs are really built upon helping those families find their new level of normalcy and moving forward. Now, we know that, unfortunately, it takes some families a lot longer than others, and we have families that we've been supporting for, you know, 10, 15 years, and then others who have, you know, figured out their way and move forward in a positive manner. And that's just part of the natural process for all of us in dealing with these tragedies. And it helps them kind of go at the pace they're comfortable with.
Now, I've got a question for you and Dave, which is, how did you two come together? How did Dave, how did you come to write the song for the NFFF?
The chief would agree that Vicki Pritchett is maybe in the middle of all that. Could it be?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was doing an event. I do a lot of speaking about customer service and branding and that sort of thing after the United Breaks Guitars event. And I was doing an event for fire chiefs. I think there were about 500 fire chiefs in the room. And Vicky had suggested that I write a song for the National Fallen Firefighters, because that's something that I think songwriters can be of great value in giving voice to something that maybe needs to be amplified. And so I thought about it, and it was an easy sell on the idea because I had been a volunteer firefighter myself. My brother is a full-time firefighter here in Canada, and I just believe in the cause. And so I tried to capture the moment, and I had a meeting with the chief, and we talked about a little bit about what the organization was about, and I sort of immersed myself in what they do, and he was a big supporter of the whole idea and the notion of giving everything about the National Fallen Firefighters an amplified voice.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, the song itself, like I said, to me, it was an anthem. It gave me chills when I listened to it. And then I said, okay, who is the NFFF? Let me look these up, look them up. And that's how I came across the site, Chief. And that's when I came back to Dave and said, you know, let's do something that will help your organization, make people aware of your organization. Because, I think it's amazing what you do. Now, Dave, you had a question. I think you're going to ask something about the Everyone Goes Home program. I can ask that. You have a program called Everyone Goes Home, which created 16 firefighter life safety initiatives. What is that? How are they implemented?
Absolutely. And so that is our line of duty death, injury, and prevention program. And that's I'd mentioned it a little bit ago that, you know, after 9/11, we realized we needed to get in the prevention business. And so we convened the National Gathering of the Fire Service in 2004 in Tampa, Florida. You know, okay, what do we do to stop the increasing number of deaths? We were on a steady upward climb of firefighter fatalities. And so the fire service as a whole came together and said, we need to put together a blueprint and push it across the country. And so the program was entitled Everyone Goes Home. And the idea is at the end of the day, the end of the shift, at the end of the visit to the fire station, you pack up and you go home to your family, to your community, and live your life, and then come back another day to serve your community again. And yes, we know that not every firefighter goes home to his family or her family. But we also wanted to set it as a goal. It was what we wanted to get up doing, is reducing line of duty deaths. And so 16 initiatives were developed, and they cover a wide spectrum of issues within the fire service. Everything from research and technology, personal responsibility, health and wellness, training, you name it, equipment, it's in there. And they're general enough that they can be applied to the smallest rural fire department in America to the largest big city department. And really what it was a call to arms, a call to action by the fire service. And the foundation was asked to kind of lead that charge and to push the initiatives forward. And in the first 10 years of the Everyone Goes Home program, we've seen a 26% reduction in line of duty deaths across the country. That's roughly 26, because we were about 100 a year before that, 26 families that didn't go through that loss, that didn't need to come to Emmitsburg, that didn't have to go on their life without their firefighter. And we're very proud of that. And that was a joint effort of the entire fire service community. And so our goal
is there one of those that stands out as really prominent as a success?
You know, I think that the big one is health and wellness, because heart attacks continue to be the number one leading cause of firefighter fatalities. And so we are pushing for physicals and physical fitness programs and diet, exercise, nutrition, all those pieces. Unfortunately, our society in America tends to be overweight. That adds to the stressors on the cardiovascular system. And then you add the stressors of fighting a fire and the toxins of the combustion of of materials, and that toxic smoke that we inhale at the scene of incidents, and that all leads to that cardiac arrest. And so if we're going to see the biggest decrease in firefighter fatalities, it has to be in the cardiac scene. And so we went through that.
I know my brother talks about here in Canada what they eat on a 24-hour shift. There's a shift going on to eating better, that the old policy used to be, when it came to food, make sure it's brown and there's lots of it. And now they're throwing salads in and
we're
eating a lot better
that.
Now.
There is a transition in the food that's served at the kitchen table at the firehouse. And no one's saying not to do that, not to have your meals at the fire station. But, you know, be conscious about the nutritional value and the long-term effect on the bodies when you consume those products. And it's all about modification, you know, and you know, I guess the best solution is, you know, push away from the table at some point. I hate to simplify, but that's the reality of it, too.
Yeah, I got to ask you both a question, because, Dave, you are a firefighter chief. What does it take? I cannot imagine what it takes to, you know, even if you're trained to run into a fire to save people. I mean, if something happened, my house was on fire, I was home, I would do it without even thinking about it. But you've got firefighters who don't know these people, and they are running in there. The adrenaline must go up really high. And so how do you deal with that health-wise?
Well, it does create a rush. That's a known fact. And I think that what has to happen is the appropriate training relative to wearing, for example, self-contained breathing apparatus longer so that you're not inhaling those toxins for long periods of time. Appropriate protective clothing to deal with the heat elements, because we know that core body temperatures rise when the firefighter is engaged in firefighting operations. And then appropriate rehab afterwards, cooling off, hydrating, lots of fluids, taking a rest period after a major incident. And then the other piece, though, is the exercise and the diet and the nutrition all the time to keep, you know, the body in an athletic state. You look at professional sports, and that's what they do all the time. You know, the day after the big win, they're back out there practicing. They're out there, you know, performing their skills. They're running their drills, and that's one of the pieces that is critical within the fire service and all of law of public safety. To be quite honest, is to practice our skills to be the best, to provide that A game all the time.
As a volunteer, I know myself. I was on the nozzle only twice, and so I don't have a lot of experience. But because maybe I only did it a couple of times, I'll never forget it. And I know that firefighting is such a team game, and that someone's got to work the pump, and someone's looking for safety outside, and somebody's got to be inside to fight the fire. And in my experience, when I did that, it was definitely a rush. And in one case in particular, I was only in the house for maybe 7 minutes, 7-8 minutes, but the whole experience left me pretty drained. It was a real taxing experience because of the adrenaline and what was on the line. And there were no people in there, but we didn't know that at the time. And it's not at all like the movies. You can't see anything. You're fully engulfed in smoke, and you're just feeling your way around trying to find the seat of the fire. And it worked out well in my experiences, but it is very taxing on the body. It's like you feel like you've been exercising for hours, and it was, in my case, just under 10 minutes from the time we got there until the fire was up.
It's like an accident in slow motion. You know, you're viewing it in slow motion. So got to be really stressful. Well, you know, I know, like I said, your website was very impressive. You have all kinds of resources for people. But what about, okay, we talked a little bit about some of the resources. Your site allows people to search for fallen firefighters or to submit fallen firefighters, correct?
That is correct. The list of the Roll of Honor is there. So every firefighter who died and has been recognized on the memorial in Emmitsburg is listed. And the other piece, I'd mentioned that the memorial in Emmitsburg wasn't built until 81. So there's no place where those firefighters who died prior to the building of the National Memorial are listed. And so we started a project called the Pre-81 Firefighters. and we are asking for people to send in information about a firefighter who may have died prior to the memorial being built. And this past June, we created a section in Emmitsburg in our Walk of Honor. It's a brick pathway that interconnects the buildings and the memorial and the fallen firefighters' chapel with pavers. And we've created a section for the pre-81 firefighters so that their families know that their loved one won't be forgotten, even though he or she may have died before the National Memorial was built. And so that's what we're collecting information about that. And people can submit that to us and put a brick in the walk in honor of their firefighter, and it helps us to build that memorial site.
What about the annual Bells Across America? Can you talk about that? Absolutely.
And Dave, that's a great point because the bells are mentioned in the song. We know that not everyone in America knows about the foundation, but they all have some tie to the fire service. And they want to do something to pay tribute to the firefighter from their community who has died in the line of duty. And so a couple of years back, we started a campaign called Bells Across America, that at the start of the National Memorial Service, we're asking for communities to ring the bell, whether it's at a church or a school or a synagogue or some association or some establishment, to ring the bells in their town at 10 o'clock Eastern time on Sunday of the memorial service so that they can pay tribute to their firefighter who may have died in the line of duty or to their first responders who are still out there protecting their communities. And the whole idea is to engage everyone to understand the dangers that the fire service faces each and every day, and that there are individuals willing to, as you had said, to go into those burning buildings when there's a crisis and do whatever they have to try to render the situation safe and to rescue those people and to bring closure to the devastating effects of the fire or the emergency medical call or the accident or whatever it might be. And so the idea is to ring those bells and show tribute and respect and honor for those firefighters who are out serving, and especially those that have gave their life in the line of duty.
Now, we just have a few minutes before we end, and I know I want you to give out your website information in just a couple of minutes, because you offer an incredible amount of events to help raise awareness and also donations. People who can businesses and corporations donate other than just individual people, and how do they go about getting involved?
Absolutely, and it's kind of funny. I mentioned earlier that we were created by Congress, but when they created us, they also said they weren't going to fund us. So we have to find...
You have to find yourself.
Yeah, we are an unfunded congressional mandate. Job to do and no money from them to do it, but that's okay. We signed on to do that. And so we're out doing fundraising activities, and yes, we have corporate partners who do things to help us. We have individuals who send us a check or go on our website and make a credit card donation. And you're right, we're doing events around the country. We have golf tournaments and dinners and other activities that are often managed by local fire department representatives who just want to do something to help us. And we also are doing something that's pretty unique called Stair Climbs. Now, that's not a unique fundraiser, but ours are a little bit different because it started with a group of firefighters in Denver who wanted to pay respects to the 343 that died at the World Trade Center. And so the stair climbs are designed to be 110 stories high. That's how tall the World Trade Center was. And that each person who climbs the steps carries the photo of an FDNY firefighter who died at Ground Zero. Now, granted, not all the buildings are 110 stories, so they may have to, if, for example, they use a 20-story building, they'll do the steps. They'll do all the steps five times. And so we'll have people doing them in auditoriums, in gymnasiums, in outdoor arenas, but they simulate the 110 stories of climbing. And the intent is to raise funds for both the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation and the Counseling Services Unit, which is a group that is supporting the FDNY families and firefighters who died that day.
Now, we're just about up to the close, and I want to be able to play Dave's song for the ending of the show. But, Chief, how can people contact you?
The best way is go right to our website, which is firehero.org, or look up National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. Our site will pop right up. Our email addresses are there, and please reach out to us. Give us a call. We'd love to have people involved. We need the support and assistance from the public and corporations to be able to carry out this critical work that we're doing, and most of all, to let these families know that we're here to help them.
Great. Now, Dave, I want to thank you also for bringing for actually introducing the chief and I through this organization. You know, I think you're a musical genius because every song you write just seems so perfect to me, and the song that you wrote is absolutely perfect for their organization. How can people contact you, Dave, if they would like to reach you?
My email is dave@davecarrollmusic.com, and my website is just a little shorter version of that, just davecarrollmusic.com.
Great.
And I'm on Facebook and Twitter. I'm easy to find.
Okay, very good. I want to thank both of you for joining me today, and join me again next week on The World of Lori Zook.
There's a saying in our firehouse that everyone goes home. And we know the perils in our job every time we hear the tone. And on this day we fought a blaze. We did our job, four lives were saved. But in the end I sacrificed my own. I hear bells in the distance. Song for me, where flags are folded in our memory. I'm going home to Emmitsburg. They'll call my name in Emmitsburg, where tears are shed and prayers are heard for the fallen and the brave. There is peace above the embers, a lightness in the air. As I float above the members of my station in despair. For through the smoke we face our fears, the lives we saved as souvenirs. I go without regret as I declare. I hear bells in the distance, pipers playing a song for me, where flags are folded in our memory. I'm going home to Emmitsburg. They'll call my name in Emmitsburg. Tears are shed and prayers are heard for the fallen and the brave. And the families that we leave behind will gather where I'll be enshrined, along with all the others, and they'll see they're not alone. And the names carved in the monument, say it loud and confident, we'll never forgotten, and we've made it safely home. I hear bells in the distance, pipers playing a song for me, where flags are folded in our memory. They'll call my name in Emmitsburg, where tears are shed and prayers are heard for the fallen and the brave. And where tears are shed and prayers are heard for the fallen and the brave.
consumers. Do you have bad credit? Can't purchase a house or car? Paying too much in interest on your credit cards and loans? Scammed by credit repair companies? There is hope. You can get back on track and do it the right way. Call Credit Education Consultants today at 813-500-6064. That's 813-500-6064. Or go to crediteducationconsultants.com now and get the help you need. Don't delay. Call today. Mortgage reps and realtor inquiries are also welcomed.
Central Payment, your number one credit card merchant service provider in the industry. Providing e-commerce solutions, POS systems, standalone terminals, mobile apps, and much more, call Central Payments' James Carner at 813-777-4332. Looking for the lowest rates in the industry and number one customer service? Call Central Payments' James Carner at 813-777-4332. That's James Carner, 813-777-4332.
Hi, this is Dave Mason, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee and a founding member of Rock Our Vets. Please help us support our military veterans and also the families of fallen law enforcement and firefighters across the country. You know, there is an average rate of 22 veterans per day that take their own lives due to the results of PTSD and over 1,000 calls to the suicide hotline a day from our veterans. Help us to help with making their transition from military to civilian life less of a struggle. We currently have a never-ending gift card drive that allows us to get food, clothing, and basic needs to these men and women that are out on the streets, homeless. We also provide laptop computers to veterans across the country that are returning to school for their educational pursuits or need them to start and manage a business. If your company has laptops that are no longer being used, donate them to Rock Our Vets. We also have some rock and roll memorabilia from myself and many other artists that have stepped up to support these efforts. And it is all available on the website at www.rockourvets.org. Links for everything can be found on the website. And remember, we are an all-volunteer 501c3 foundation. The money donated goes directly to our veterans, and you can actually see the results if you follow us on Facebook. Thank you for your time.